Yes, welcome into a Thursday show, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Lots to get to today, some basketball, maybe a little football at the end of today's program, and we'll have a recorded conversation with Mick Tidrow, voice of the Ball State Cardinals. He has two matches on ESPN Plus with the MEVA Conference Championship for men's volleyball being hosted at Worthen Arena and Ball State University. So we caught up with Mick a little bit earlier today, and he will join us just shortly before 4:30 on the program today. Lots to get to today. We're going to talk a little Pacers and do so a lot tomorrow. NBA play-in games are going on, and man, there's a lot of health related issues with some of those teams. Jimmy Butler with Miami, you had an injury to Zion Williamson with the New Orleans Pelicans, and again, Giannis is dealing with an injury for the Milwaukee Bucks that certainly affects a lot of things in the Pacers series against Milwaukee. So, you know, health is a big deal this time of the year. There's no question about that, but we'll talk Pacers and Bucks a little bit later in the program today. But the news came out today. Ball State men's basketball brings in Joey Hart, who is a transfer from the University of Kentucky. And, you know, what's interesting is we talk a lot about the transfer portal on this program. And by the way, we'll address a little bit of this with Mick Tidrow, voice of the Cardinals, in our conversation that was recorded earlier coming up. And, you know, we're learning so many things about the transfer portal. There's been many, many cases of difference in how people go about it. You know, and I probably can't even name all of the ways we've seen the transfer portal used. Like, we've seen players bounce around three different schools in the same conference. We've seen players go to, from a Mid-American Conference school to a Big Ten school and then back to the same Mid-American Conference school, that being Peyton Sparks with Ball State men's basketball. You know, there's a player that played at Wisconsin last year that's going to be on his sixth different school in the last 6 years. That's going all the way back to high school. Like, the transfer portal is used in so many different ways, and I'm bringing up all of these different things not to criticize, not to say, oh my gosh, it's out of control. I think we've gone through it enough to know not just where we stand, but where I think nationally universities and teams feel that way. But, you know, one common theme that I've noticed from the transfer portal is this: the relationship you make with a recruit at the beginning of the process when they are a senior in high school, that relationship never ever stops now. So, like, you know, for instance, last year Ball State was in on Joey Hart when he played in the state finals with, I believe, Linton Stockton. They played in the IHSA state finals. And so Ball State was there, and they were, you know, obviously with the University of Kentucky as one of the finalists, I guess, for Joey Hart. Joey Hart ends up going to the University of Kentucky. Now, by that point, your process is done. You know, player is committed to a school. From that standpoint, it's over. Well, what happens is, and you know, we find out about, you know, hey, Ball State's interested in X player. Ball State's interested in player Y. You know, they're in. But there's so many more recruits or contacts with recruits that we just don't know about. That, you know, hey, you know, that you recruited somebody that went to the another Mid-American Conference school, and we don't know about that contact. We did with Joey Hart. The long and the short of this is, you know, Joey Hart enters the transfer portal, and Ball State gets in contact with him, and there's not really a whole, like, starting from square one with that recruit, with that transfer portal player, because the basis of the conversation started a year ago. You know, you had contact, you had interest in Joey Hart. You went through all the recruiting aspects. So again, you know, it's a part of the transfer portal that is really interesting. that the relationship with this player was obviously a big deal, and, you know, him in the second time around with a coaching change and maybe playing time and all those sorts of things, now he's a Ball State Cardinal. And, you know, I guess that's one of the things that makes the transfer portal very unique, that also makes it, hey, you know, just because you don't get a recruit, the contact and the relationship you make with them a year, 2 years ago, becomes a big deal when it comes to this time of the year. Because you might think there's so many schools, there's so many recruits that, you know, when the transfer portal happens, you know, you got to get in contact, you got to sell your program. But really, when you look at it in totality, the coaches know each other, the players know each other, the recruits know each other, and there's so much that goes on about it. But I just found it very interesting today when thinking about the process with this particular player. You know, it's crazy how much has happened with Ball State men's basketball. And by the way, I'm thinking of this off the top of my head when I'm speaking about the transfer portal right now. Ball State has had two different circumstances where a player left them and ended up coming back. If you go back to Jerron Coleman and now Peyton Sparks, and now you have this one. You were in on Joey Hart. He goes to the University of Kentucky. A year later, he's now with Ball State men's basketball. So the path isn't as linear as it used to be. Transfers have always been a part of collegiate sports. The difference is the transfer portal and not the, you know, the deal where you sit out a year. That doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, make no mistake about it, the relationships are huge. You know, I don't know, to be honest with you, I'll throw this out there and say, I don't flat out know how these transfer portal things happen. Like, does a team anticipate knowing, hey, you know, these two players are likely gonna test their name? Like, do we have to prepare ahead of time knowing that player X is going to enter? I'm sure that's very subjective. I'm sure that's very different depending on the program and the team you're a part of. But, you know, Davion Bailey enters the transfer portal. Jalen Anderson enters the transfer portal. Immediately, you're in the shooting guard, you know, deal. You need to go get some guards. I mean, Trent Middleton Jr. also left as well. Technically, your top three guards are not on this team from last year. So you have to, you know, obviously make an impact there in a lot of ways. And Joey Hart is the newest member of Ball State men's basketball. And so I found that fascinating when breaking this all down. And look, we can talk about fit. We can talk about what Joey Hart is as a player later down the road. He's 6'5". He's got range. He can shoot from anywhere on the floor. You know, he's a high-level recruit. He was an Indiana All-Star last year. You know, all those different things. Like, he's going to translate to this level and immediately give you a perimeter threat, but also the length. We can get into all those different things down the road, but this is yet another chapter in the transfer portal with Ball State men's basketball, but with the transfer portal in general, that shows you, hey, you may lose, but you also may gain at the same time. You know, the relationships that you build with recruits in the first cycle, you might have an opportunity at them down the road for a lot of different reasons in the transfer portal. You know, there's a lot of players that enter their name in the transfer portal just to see what the interest is like. There's players that enter their name in the transfer portal that just had a coaching change. And that's, I don't know the circumstance with Joey Hart, but you can put two and two together with John Calipari now in Arkansas. And Joey Hart enters the transfer portal. You know, he didn't play a ton last year at the University of Kentucky, so that could have been part of it as well. But ultimately, you know, you got to be in the right place at the right time with something like this as well. But, you know, it makes it easier for Ball State when, hey, you recruited this kid last year. He knows you. You know him. There's not a lot of selling going back and forth. I mean, obviously, to close the deal, there is, because there's other teams that are likely interested in Joey Hart. But you were probably ahead of a lot of those teams because you had recruited him last year and you had created that relationship before. These are all the things that are not talked about when it comes to the transfer portal. You know, think about Peyton Sparks coming back. Like, obviously, Peyton knows this program, knows the head coaching staff, has been coached by this staff before. There wasn't a lot of, like, you have to sell it. He's in the transfer portal. You have contact with him. You say, you want to do this again. Like, that's, you know, you already have that relationship. That's understandable. But, you know, I think people maybe don't think about the recruits that maybe you didn't get, that you had conversations with, you got deep in discussions with about how this possibility may work out. So that's good work by the program. That's good work by Michael Lewis and his staff, because you use that prior relationship to your advantage to get Joey Hart this time. I think he's going to translate very well in the Mid-American Conference. And, you know, I know they're excited about it. If you look at social media and see what the coaching staff's saying about it, they're fired up about it, and they should be, because I remember this time last year feeling, you know, that was going to be a fit. Also feeling like Zane Doughty with Ben Davis after the state championship game. There were a lot of lines being drawn with that connection there after he decommitted from Valparaiso. So, again, the relationships you create, man, can help you big time in the transfer portal. And so, you know, you might not get everybody that you go out there. Actually, you probably don't get even a very high percentage. I bet the percentage is very, very interesting to look at. Contact with recruits and recruits you bring in. And, of course, in basketball, you've got, you know, 13, 14, 15 scholarship players. But I do think that Ball State benefited from having recruited Joey Hart last year in this scenario. You know, middle of the season this year, do you know if Joey Hart's going to enter the transfer portal? No, but you did the work ahead of time to put yourself in position for this. And I think this translates to any sport. Doesn't matter who, what sport you're recruiting, when, you know, you create that relationship across the table, man, it makes a big difference. It absolutely does. So that is the part that I found very fascinating with this news today, of how this all kind of came about with the transfer portal and those sorts of things. And again, I still feel the same way as most do. There's got to be regulations. There's got to be change to the transfer portal. But, you know, if you work it the right way and you do the work each and every year, you might have opportunities like this where, you know, player goes to different program, wasn't what they were expecting, wasn't this, wasn't that. They entered the transfer portal, and you already have a leg up because you recruited them before. Yeah, it's fascinating. It really, really is. And that's the part of all of this that nobody is really talking about. So, again, I think there's going to be reform to the transfer portal at some point. I don't know when. But, you know, I think at some point you've got to take a look at all of it, because there's too much uproar between coaches, programs, et cetera. But this is the part of this particular situation that I found pretty fascinating. So wanted to bring it up on the show today. We'll address some of this with Big Tidrell, voice of the Cardinals, in our recorded conversation coming up here in a little bit. Pacers and Bucks coming up on Sunday. I don't think there's a time just yet, and the reason being, you know, you still have some of these play-in games that you got to figure out, but the Pacers will play on Sunday. They will play against a team in and actually we do have a time for game number one. The series will start on Sunday, and the start time is 7 o'clock, I guess. So the Pacers will play in the third game that day. Before them is the Boston first-round series that begins at 1. Clippers and the Dallas Mavericks play at 3:30, and then the Pacers at Milwaukee will begin at 7 o'clock. You know, local coverage on the Pacers radio network, of course, but the game can be watched nationally on TNT. The game after the Pacers would be Oklahoma City against whoever the 8th seed will be, because the you know, the play-in tournament isn't determined yet. The next game for the Pacers would be on Tuesday night next week, 8:30 they would play against Milwaukee. So the first two game times, I guess, are set. So to recap, Pacers on Sunday at Milwaukee, 7 o'clock the start. Game two would be on Tuesday night, Milwaukee hosting Indiana, and the game would tip off at 8:30. So we have the start times. We have a little bit of the schedule. That's good news there. Let's talk about the game itself. You know, we haven't really addressed this a ton, and yesterday didn't really have a chance to touch on this with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. You know, I look at this series, and I say this. There is no doubt that there is a team that has pressure on them, and there is no doubt that there is a team that comes into this as the curiosity of the NBA playoffs. The Milwaukee Bucks have a lot of pressure on them. There is buzz around that basketball team that Giannis isn't happy, that Damian Lillard doesn't like the fit as much as he thought, that there's so much there, and there are people around the Bucks that say, if you went back and did this trade again, Damian Lillard for, you know, the Drew Holiday-centered package, with Drew Holiday being traded to Portland. He was bought out. Now he's with the Celtics, and the Celtics are thrilled that they just extended Drew Holiday. You know, you look back at that deal. If Milwaukee had a chance to do it over, would they? If Damian Lillard had a chance to go elsewhere, would he? If Damian Lillard would have gone, because for, you know, the longest time in the offseason, it was like a foregone conclusion that Damian Lillard was going to go to the Miami Heat. And then in the final hour, after weeks and weeks and weeks of speculation about this, Milwaukee swoops in and gets him. And on the surface, you felt like it was a great fit. And maybe this is one of those situations where, and we might not see it early on or at all in this series, where when you have two stars on the floor in the postseason, it is a lot to handle in a seven-game series. They have not been as good as people have expected them to be. They fell to the three seed. You know, the Knicks ended up jumping into that second seed. It's kind of interesting how all of this has played out. But all of that chatter and all of that stuff around it puts an immense amount of pressure on Milwaukee. The thing is, people think that pressure, you know, makes a team play scared or play a little afraid or play, to force things in that regard. But it could also do the opposite. Like, you know, Milwaukee made the trade for Damian Lillard, I would like to think, to compete with Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, or compete with, you know, the team that they feel like they've got to battle most in the Eastern Conference. And there's no doubt about it. Milwaukee will match up very well against Boston. They'll match up well against anybody. You know, make no mistake about it, there's really not a team that you go out there and you say, oh my gosh, they match up great against Milwaukee. Because tell me one player that matches up with a healthy Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now, it seems like Giannis isn't going to be healthy in the NBA playoffs or in this series in general. But there is no question that Milwaukee has pressure on them. The Pacers come in as a team of curiosity. They are the team that is out there that most nationally say, if I could see an upset, it would be the six-seeded Pacers over the three-seeded Milwaukee Bucks. Now, you know, you may think that people having the Pacers as a curiosity, and they have the backs against the wall and all those different things. And now, nationally, there's people that are out there saying, oh, hey, you know, Pacers have come to play. Got to watch them. They might end up upsetting the Milwaukee Bucks. That actually comes with pressure. So there's no doubt about it that Milwaukee has pressure on them because of the expectations. The Pacers, you know, I think locally people felt like they were going to take a step up, maybe not to this degree, maybe not the play-in experience that they had or the in-season tournament that they had, championship experience against the LA Lakers, whatever the case may be. And now Tyrese Halliburton's on Team USA. But I do think that you could look at it as a flip. Sometimes pressure's good for a team, and sometimes the curiosity team or the up-and-coming team, they try to force things. because, as we talked about yesterday with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network, it is so incredibly important to have playoff experience. You know, internally, the Pacers feel as though that they are a team that can surprise, and they are ready to compete right now with Haliburton and Siakam and the balance offensively that they present. But their biggest uphill challenge is teams that were constructed, you know, in one season, typically don't have a lot of success in the playoffs very early on. Think about all the past NBA champions we've had. I mean, Golden State's perfect. They were in the playoffs twice before they ever got to the NBA Finals or even really won a playoff series. You know, you think about Milwaukee. It took steps on steps on steps to win that one championship that they got there. You know, you got to think of Boston, how many times it's taken them to get there. Denver, you know, people were hanging over the head of Nikola Jokic the carrot of, hey, you know, he's a great regular season player. He doesn't deserve the MVP because he hasn't done anything in the postseason. And last year, of course, he breaks through. So, look, the Pacers aren't going to be mentioned amongst the teams we just described here. I mean, they're not Denver. They're not Boston. They're not Milwaukee. So they're going to have to deal with the fact that they haven't been here before, and experience is huge in the postseason. But there's something about this team that, you know, reminds me of a team like, I don't know, that can just put a lot of scores on the floor and maybe, you know, surprise. Maybe take a team that has a lot of expectations and they're the underdog and they come to play. We don't see – it's crazy. You know, the NFL has a lot of upsets in the postseason. There's a lot of wild card teams that end up going to the conference championship games or go to the Super Bowl. It happens a lot. We have upsets in Major League Baseball. The Arizona Diamondbacks were huge last year in you know, doing what they did. We have this in nearly every sport except the NBA playoffs. There's a lot of chalk in the NBA playoffs. We rarely get a team that you sit there and you say, I cannot believe they made the NBA Finals. Denver was the one seed last year. Some people were surprised because they never really expected to see them take that step, but they were the one seed for a reason. You know, the Lakers are going to be a team that's going to be the seventh seed, okay? So they're not seeded very high. But at the same time, they've got LeBron James. They're a team with Anthony. They're a team that, of course, there's expectations there. Like, nobody expects anything from Orlando, Cleveland, New York. You know, I'm looking at other teams here. You know, if Chicago gets through, nobody's expecting anything from those teams. But for the most part, in the NBA, it's a lot of chalk. It's a lot of expected. And so that'll be something that'll be interesting. Can the Pacers be against the trend in that regard? Because they are a team that if they won a first-round playoff series, that would be an upset. That would be an unexpected outcome. So we'll see how all of that plays out, and we'll talk about it more coming up tomorrow. Also, by the way, thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. It's a week from today. The NBA or the NFL the NFL first round draft will come into play. Can you believe that? That is wild to think that's happening. The NFL draft is coming. We'll talk more about it with George Berman from the Herald Bulletin coming up tomorrow. But when we come back, we're going to go back to the Ball State sports conversation. And Mick Tindrow joins us each and every week. He's going to stop by the program next. We had a recorded conversation with him earlier. Get his thoughts when we return on everything happening with Ball State Athletics. That's next on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Welcome back to the show. It's the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. As always, brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. It's a busy day, and obviously nobody's busier. Mick Tindrow, are you the busiest Ball State Athletics employee today, or are there others kind of putting all this on?
Oh, Mark. Mark. No, that's there's so many people that are pulling the strings today to make Neva volleyball happen on the men's volleyball side of things. So special shout out to everybody in Boston Athletics from the top to bottom, because putting on a first class event for conference tournament semifinals today and then championship Saturday. So I'm part of the machine, but there's so many people doing a ton of great work and making things go, from the communication staff, administration, coaches, athletes, especially facilities, making sure that they've got time slots for all the athletes and coaches. So big shout out to everybody, and couldn't do it without the whole group.
Well, and the reason I bring all this up is for those that don't know this, by the way, a recorded conversation, and the reason why is when Ball State hosts the MEVA volleyball tournament, Ball State the number one seed, that's how you secure it being at Worthen Arena. From a broadcasting standpoint and a responsibility standpoint, Ball State as a whole is kind of the host for all of this, and you get to broadcast both of these matches, at kind of the relationship with the MEVA and those sorts of things. So there's a lot of undertaking when it's hosted, but I would imagine since this was hosted a couple of years back, Ball State's very familiar with kind of putting all these things in place, Mick. But from a broadcast standpoint, what can people expect today?
Yeah, Mark, no, you hit the nail on the head. Like, Ball State's had some experience the last couple of years in hosting the MEVA. This year's a slight tweak to it, because with now 9 teams in the MEVA, only 8 make it. So with that team in Queens joining the conference, 8 teams make it now, just like it's always been, I guess. But the reason they're doing that and making the semifinals and the championship at the same venue is to help with travel and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why. So in the past, it had always been the top seed in whatever matchup hosts. So whether the semifinals would be at the number 2 or 3 seed, that's how it was in the past. But now it's after the quarterfinals, that highest team remaining hosts. So now Ball State gets to do that because of winning the regular season, being the number one seed. So it'll be a really great night of men's volleyball, Mark. That first matchup between Ohio State and Loyola could be the one to remember, because the first two matches between those schools in the regular season, they went 5 sets, and Loyola took both of them. So we know Ohio State's rearing up and ready to go, and Lyndon Woods on a 7-match win streak coming in to face Ball State today, and of course the Cardinals win the regular season. So these 4 teams that are left are truly all so good and have gone up against each other throughout the course of the year. Ball State swept Loyola this year in the regular season. Loyola swept Ohio State. Ball State swept Lindenwood. You know, there's just this round and round circle that you can go to see who did what against one another. So really high level 4 teams going up against one another today and then Saturday.
So when was the first Ball State men's volleyball match that you did this season? Mick, do you remember the date or the month it was?
Yeah, January 11th against UC San Diego.
Okay, so from that point to this point, because you've done some matches in between and obviously leading up to this point, including the quarterfinal matchup last week, from watching them from the start to where they are now, from aesthetically, where have they improved the most? Where are they most different from how they progressed throughout the year, Mick?
Ooh, that's a great question, Mark. And I think some of it just stems from the simple fact that they're getting healthy. And that may be a cop-out answer, but they really are just finding a way to be healthy and be productive, because they've had the bumps and bruises. They've had players miss time, but hopefully that they can have a pretty full-strength roster going into tonight and Saturday. You never know. But at this point, healthy and having that team chemistry, I think the big thing is that Tanashi has been able to just really find a groove and a level with his teammates, and the rest of the squad has followed that after the first 8 games in which he didn't play. And so that is big. And when you combine that, Patrick Rogers, who's missed some time the last few games on the outside, there's so much to look forward to in that aspect. But the setter, Lucas Machado, has grown into his role with Ball State. And him being a freshman, walking in the door and having immediate success isn't a surprise to anybody. But I think when he comes in and does this and messes with a new squad, it's impressive. So I think the team is settling in all aspects of their roles more so now than they ever have. And I think that's why that push to win the regular season wasn't a surprise.
It's Mick Tidjo, voice of the Cardinals, with us in a recorded conversation on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. So this next matchup, and, you know, I had Coach Donan Cruz on Tuesday, and, you know, what makes this all so unique when you get to the conference tournament side, and it may be this way in other sports, but not very many. Like, you know, when you play in the basketball conference tournament, you may have had one matchup, possibly two, so in the regular season. But in the Mivas case, you face these teams twice, once on the road, once at home. And so every one of these matchups in the tournament's always the third matchup around. And so, you know, my question to Coach was, do you change anything? Do you add any wrinkles? And it provides an interesting conversation, because when you play Lindenwood or whoever you end up playing, if you make it to the final on Saturday, Mick, there's not a lot of secrets. So Lindenwood this time, what stands out?
They're better now than they've been at all this year. Like this last seven match streak has been impressive, Mark. They hosted a quarterfinal in the Miva tournament for the first time in program history since 2013. Like, this team is hot right now. And so when we talk about adding different wrinkles, Lindenwood's last loss was against Ball State on March 16th. And so they've got a month straight on a straight win streak. And we had a chance to talk with Coach Kostyuf earlier today, and he just said that they were sick and tired of losing. They were sick and tired of the same thing happening. And so they went into practice the next day and worked on a ton of things, and that mindset shift happened, and the camaraderie and the awareness for the team to get better has jumped. So to answer your question directly, I don't know if there's going to be any different wrinkles from either team. I think more so it's going to be two teams that are in completely different places than March 16th in a good way, in a great way for both teams. So I think that only heightens a semifinal matchup against a couple of teams that are on different ends of Miva history, right? Ball State is that pinnacle of the conference, along with Ohio State, Loyola Chicago, and Lindenwood's trying to make the championship in the conference tournament for the first time ever. So you have different motivations, but in terms of wrinkles and X's and O's, like, I think at this point, man, it's just let it fly. Who's going to serve the best? What blocks are going to go into place? And what are the outside hitters going to do? What's the passing and defense look like? So, I think it's just going to be a lot of excitement between these two.
ESPN Plus tonight, where we can find all this, Mick?
Yep, ESPN Plus for both matches.
Awesome. And when people are hearing this interview, of course, recorded, you'll be in the midst of match number one, Loyola Chicago and Ohio State. Moving on to another topic, Mick, and it's news from today. Ball State men's basketball adding Joey Hart from the transfer portal. Fans from Indiana High School basketball will remember that name. He spent last year at the University of Kentucky, and it was confirmed today that he is headed to Ball State men's basketball. You know, I want to take this a different angle, Mick, because we'll have time to kind of figure out his fit on the floor. But, you know, we've talked about the transfer portal so much in these conversations, Mick, and I think what's really interesting about the transfer portal is, in this case, Ball State was in on Joey Hart last year. He goes elsewhere, and then the very next year, you kind of create that connection again to bring him in this time. There's that, like, second cycle, and, you know, I guess in some ways, does it make it even more important to keep tabs on the recruits that maybe you don't get the first time, that you keep that relationship, you keep that line of communication going? Because I'm sure last year, you never knew if Joey Hart would enter the transfer portal at this point to have a second go at it. I find that part of all of the transfer portal very interesting, Mick.
Yeah, I think that as soon as somebody enters a transfer portal and you've had a history or conversations with them, it's a pretty natural way to re-spark those discussions, right? And to make sure that everything's taken care of the way it needs to be taken care of within a conversation. So, yeah, I think relationships in this era of college athletics are super important, because if you're building a rapport with somebody, if you're building a connection with an athlete that maybe doesn't go to your school but then enters the portal the next year and you are interested, that open line of communication could be opened back up. So, yeah, I think it's pretty interesting to sit down and think about what all that looks like. from a portal perspective and a relationship perspective. So, yeah, I think the having an established conversation at the very beginning and then moving forward is a smart thing to do for schools, and I'm sure that's what so many of those coaches have to do now, right, is make sure that when they do have conversations with people that they've made sure that they are staying in touch with them, of course, within the bounds of the NCAA rules and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think the relationships are super, super important at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of
– Always have been, right?
Yeah.
Always have been, but –
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right now.
And, you know, the transfer portal is interesting because I think Ball State men's basketball has been through a little bit of everything over the last several years. In this case, somebody you recruited hard last year and they choose a different, place to go initially, and then they end up coming to you. And then, you know, the Peyton Sparks deal, he goes to IU last year, he comes back. I mean, there's so many different ways that, again, you might lose in the transfer portal, but you might gain as well. Mick, before we let you go, it was a couple weeks ago we were talking about these pivotal matchups for Ball State baseball in the series that they have in the Mid-American Conference. Amazing what's happened in the last 2 weeks, and if the season ended today, Ball State would be right there on the line of the 4 seed in the Mid-American Conference tournament. The work that they've done over the last 3 weeks, what about what they've done to get to this point? There's a lot still to go, but man, what a last 3 weeks it's been for the program.
Mark, it has been, and it's been a really exciting, rejuvenated stretch for Ball State baseball, and the definite difference maker is health and the chemistry starting to come together. And Coach Maloney, talking to him earlier in the year, he was like, yeah, it might take some time for this group to mesh. 21 new faces, most we've ever had in his time come in at the same time. So when you have all of that, trying to figure out what works for a group, what makes everybody tick is important. And Coach Maloney is so good at getting to those points. And this year, when that stride was hit, it's been great to see. So there's a lot of different reasons, but one of them, Hunter Dobbins moving back to catcher after having some health things and injuries and having to only DH, definitely a factor. Now that he's back behind the plate, bringing that veteran presence to help the pitching staff, that's one big reason why the staff is making those big strides. And then his offense is just explosive right now. Reigning MAC player of the week because of 4 home runs and 10 runs batted in over the week and a 3.333 OPS. Like, you don't see that every week from a player. So Dobbins has been great. The lefties at the top of the rotation now with Merritt Beaker and Keegan Johnson have changed the game. When you have two lefties that have dramatically improved from the start of the year and put in a lot of time and effort and energy to hone their craft, and that makes things so much smoother. And put Nate Blaine in the bullpen too. Like, that move is not a move that a lot of coaches would have done because he is a third starter, or he's a Friday starter too at some point of the year, and they wanted to have that guy that can come in and shut a game up when they needed it, and he's done everything and more out of the bullpen. So I think just little adjustments throughout the year paired with the emergence of some guys and the health becoming a better position for Ball State's help with that resurgence. But yeah, Mark, there's a big series this weekend against Western Michigan because that's the standing number 2 team in the conference right now. And if Ball State can win that series, you're talking really good positioning for the rest of the year.
And then 60 seconds here, Mick. The softball team, very similar that way. I mean, I think there was a time about 3 weeks ago, and it was very early in the conference schedule, albeit, but they were second to last from a record standpoint, and now they position themselves in the top half of the middle of the conference, you know, right around that 5-6 mark, kind of where you want to be in this stretch run over the next 3-4 weeks in the prime of Mid-American Conference play.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Mark. That sweep against Bowling Green last weekend was massive on senior weekend, and dropped a couple of close ones to Miami. He was ranked 24th in the nation, just a crazy story out of Oxford this year. And then this weekend is pivotal to what could possibly happen indeed because of Akron and Ball State are right there with each other in the standings, both vying for a top six spot at this point. So a lot to be decided, but this weekend is a critical one and a homecoming of sorts for former Ball State softball head coach Craig Nicholson. And Ball State's going to look to treat him to some losses on his end and some Ball State wins.
Oh, man, there's so much happening in Ball State athletics right now. Mick Tidrell will be on the call of two semifinal matchups in the MEVA Conference Tournament. That is at Worthen Arena. First one is Ohio State and Loyola Chicago. Ball State, the one seed, will face off against Lindenwood a little bit later this evening. Mick, have a great call. Thanks, as always, for the recap of Ball State sports, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Appreciate you, as always, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Go Cards.
Well, there's your Ball State sports rundown. Outstanding stuff. A recorded conversation earlier with Mick Tidrell, voice of Ball State Athletics. We're back with you next on The Power. After this, it is the talk of Muncie, WMUN. Presented, as always, by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. Great conversation with Mick Tidrell, voice of the Cardinals. Will be recapping a bit of that coming up tomorrow as Ball State looks to advance to Saturday's championship game in the MEVA. They would, if they were to win on Saturday, headed to the Final Four of the NCAA tournament, believe it or not. It's a big weekend for Ball State men's volleyball. Of course, Ball State did that a couple of years back in Donan Cruz's first season as head coach. Last year, they got to the championship game of the MEVA, but certainly a great opportunity to do that once again. I'm gonna switch courses here real quick, and we might get into more of this coming up tomorrow, but you might have heard on today's Dan Patrick show, you know, every once in a while we reference the Fox Sports Radio shows that are on our air each and every day right here. And I found it interesting, NFL Network's Peter Schrager, and actually I think this was from yesterday, Peter Schrager was on with Dan Patrick talking about his mock draft for the NFL draft that is next Thursday, a week from today. And his process is a little bit different than other mock drafts you might see out there. He takes this directly from sources and things he's been told by general managers, coaches, and people personnel in the league. And so yesterday he went through kind of all of the different things associated with his mock draft. Well, I just saw this a moment ago in a story, or maybe it was a radio hit he had elsewhere. He says this: the Cardinals have the fourth overall pick. So here's how the first round kind of shakes out. Number one is the Bears, likely to take Caleb Williams. Number two is the Commanders, and they are expected to take Jaden Daniels. Number three is the Patriots, all signs pointing to them taking a quarterback and likely being Drake May. So the draft for the non-quarterback needy teams kind of begins at number four. And the pivot point there has been the Arizona Cardinals at number four. And for a while, it has been thought that Marvin Harrison Jr. would be the pick at number four. Now, there's been a lot of offers out there, obviously, for that number four pick, because teams that are not in the quarterback market, or even teams that are, would want to get up to four, either take the best position player out there, or if you're in a quarterback situation, you might want to take the fourth best quarterback and kind of start that run on quarterbacks after the first three. Well, Peter Schrager said he wouldn't be surprised if the Colts got all the way up to number four and took their favorite receiver, that being Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., etc. Could you imagine if that happens? You know, it's not often that maybe one player would change your entire thought on an offseason, but if the Colts did that and went up and got the best receiver that they perceive in the draft, I would have to be very honest about how that would change my assessment of the Indianapolis Colts offseason. As I've told you before, I've had pretty strong opinions on their offseason, but keep an eye on that, and that might be something we ask George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin coming up tomorrow. Big thanks to Mick Tindrill. Big thanks to all of you for joining us. We're back with you tomorrow at 4 to close out the week on a Friday. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.